in, step right up. The show's about to begin. Forget your troubles and raise your cups. Here's to this moment, it will never happen again.
This is Offstage and On the Air.
This is Offstage and On the Air, performance number 766. I am Lisa Sheps, and I am joined once again today by my fabulous, beautiful, and gorgeous co-host, Miss Nicole Shiro.
Hello!
You are listening to us on KOOP HD1 HD3 Hornsby, streaming live at KOOP.org.
Step right up, the show's about to begin. Forget your troubles and raise your cup. Step right up.
It is Wednesday, April 3rd, 2024. On the show today, we have The Vortex and The Black Feminist Guide to the Human Body. Later on, we'll be talking to Austin Playhouse and their show, Born with Teeth. And of course, we're going to have a wonderful conversation about the world of theater in Austin, New York, Chicago, London, and Paris, France. Don't go away. How's that for the best timing in the world?
Because you're a timer.
I am a timer. That was the song Sun and Moon from Miss Saigon, and that was Leah Salonga singing there.
You love me some Leah Salonga.
I do love me some Leah Salonga, but do you have any idea why I played the Sun and the Moon?
Did you play it because there's this thing happening called the eclipse?
There is indeed this thing happening called the eclipse, and it's the Sun and the Moon, but really it's going to be clouds.
It could be rain at this point.
Could be rains. Could be clouds. So it'll get dark. Darker.
It'll be darker.
Yeah.
I mean, it will still be dark for the 2 hour period. And
they, you know what?
Who
they
will know if we see the minute and a half of the eclipse? No, it'll get dark outside no matter what.
Do you have any special plans for the eclipse, regardless of what happens?
I mean, I'll go in my backyard. I don't want to be out driving around in cray-cray.
Yeah.
I have glasses. And
I have glasses, too.
Yeah.
I also have glasses with which to watch the eclipse.
Eclipse. Yes, I have those also.
I know.
Do you remember when we used to make, bless you, no one here ever does it anymore, talks about the make the shoebox. Remember how when we were kids?
They talked about it.
I haven't seen anybody teaching people.
About it, but can I say, this shoebox is stupid.
I'm not saying it was cool, but it was a fun craft and got you excited as a kid.
Lisa B. Thompson is here in the house. And
did you ever make the shoebox to look at the eclipse?
But you also can do a piece of paper and put a pin in it. And do that too.
You could do that too.
I did that.
But again, you're not seeing it. You're seeing a reflection of it on the back of something else.
So you don't go blind though. So people have really gone blind.
Right.
Yes, and you can happen so quick.
Yes, quickly.
Like, well, it's 20 seconds. I don't want to, I don't want to say anything. But
no one's suggesting this stuff like they used to when we were younger. And I think it's great for kids to get out and craft.
Well, no, actually, I tell you, the last eclipse, the partial one that we had not too long ago, and this one, my boys and girls at KXAN are talking about it.
I missed that segment when they did it. No, I've seen them talking about the glasses.
They're talking about the shoebox.
Please, everybody's talking about the eclipse. I've seen a lot of that. But
no, which eclipse are you talking about?
Yes, right?
You know what? All that talk is eclipsing all the talk about Broadway.
Net, net, net.
So we've just introduced
Lisa B. Thompson.
It's literally
Broadway is dark on Monday, so is the eclipse. Oh, dun, dun, dun.
All right. Lisa, we're never going to get to introduce you, so it was just people just know who you are.
It is Lisa B. Thompson.
The one and the only. So let's get to the junk we're talking about, shall we?
Yes, let's do it.
Hold on, I'm trying to turn on this this iPad now that I'm doing it on
You do
iPad.
Look very official with your iPad. I just want to let you know,
Well, we had a Broadway opening this week, and we will be having lots of Broadway openings in a little bit.
But, the season.
Yeah, because they're all trying to get in before the Tonys.
This was the revival of The Who's Tommy, directed by the person that directed it and helped co-create the the book of it 10 years ago. More than 10 years.
It was
25 years
that's
ago.
That's when I was like, wait a minute.
Des Makanoff. And my friend Sandy Frank worked on Tommy on its original. I've got to call her and see if she's working on the revival. But those of us of a certain age, Lisa yes. B. Thompson, Hello. Lisa Sheps, and Nicole Shiro, the Who's Tommy, the concept album played a big part in my life. It was one of the first albums I got. It was a gift from Ellen Tumum to me. I still have that same album.
The actual vinyl, correct?
Yes, the actual vinyl. And it's the one I had in 1974, I think.
That's fantastic.
So that's amazing. And the music is so
good. You and I went
good.
And saw Tommy together over at the Zach.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah,
So we've actually had two productions here, local productions. Yeah. We had the one at the Zach. We had City Theater, which wasn't actually a bad production.
You enjoyed it.
Oddly enough,
I didn't go with you on that one, but you and I had a field trip on the other one.
And then I also saw, did you see the Broadway?
I did see the Broadway. I enjoyed that.
I saw the pre-Broadway when it was in LA it wasn't at the Pantages, it was somewhere else.
I didn't realize you saw the pre-Broadway. How did you enjoy that?
I was underwhelmed.
That's right. Because I think you said then you did enjoy it. Looking at it different.
Lisa B., have you seen the musical Tommy?
I've never seen Tommy, but I did date a Tommy.
Do you want to know what? I have never dated a Tommy. So you're winning on that one.
That's it.
Tommy, can you hear me?
Did you ask him if he could hear you?
Well,
apparently not. He's not around.
No.
So, anyway, the aggregator, Did They Like It, had 13 reviews.
And?
11 were super positive, and one was meh, and one was negatory, good buddy.
Oh. And, well, that one negative's not so bad.
No, it's not so bad, but, you know, usually it's... whatever, but the negative was our friend at the Theater of Record. Yes, it was. Nicole has walked away.
I'm
from
running
the
around. I'm sorry.
Running
around. So I was not in front of the mic.
We engineer our own show, so we have to.
Y'all
do
can use let's, these pretty things and just bring them.
Let's
right
take
up
this
to your
moment
face.
to introduce the two other people that just came into the room, and hopefully I'm going to be able to pronounce your name properly because we've not met before. I don't think.
No, we haven't.
Natasha Devon.
Oh, spot on.
Yes. Okay, that's the last time it'll happen right, I guarantee it. And Sade Jones, hey. So good to see you. Oh my God, I wish I could come over there and hug
She's
you.
She's sending you hugs over
I know,
there.
I saw that. That's what made me think of
it
that.
It went through
We're talking
me,
about
I felt
the two's homie. The who's Tommy.
The who's homie?
The two's homie that opened up this last week. And so I chose to focus not on the negative review, which was done by Jesse Green of the New York Times, but I have the review.
He was the one negative, huh?
Right. Juan Ramirez of Broadway Lee. Is that what it's called?
Broadway Lee? Yeah.
Yeah, Broadway Lee. It's a weird name. No, Theater Lee. It's not Broadway Lee. It's Theater Lee.
I was like, there is a Lee. It is Theater Lee.
It's Theater Lee. Anyway, so he really called out the amount of projections, screens, and light rigs on stage. And he said, quote, "The amount of projections, screens, and light rigs on stage of late have me close to finally agreeing the commercial theatrical creativity might actually be dead." And yet, in director Des Makanoff's dynamic staging and updating of his original 1993 work, they create dimension, providing depth, capacity required to pull off a beloved rock opera about a nascent god. So they're using a lot of projections. And I do agree. I am kind of over projections, depending on how they are used. We talked about Mean Girls. I thought they were used really well in Mean Girls.
The projections in Mean Girls were done spot on.
They were done spot on.
And I can't believe I'm going to say
this. It's the third time we've used that word in this episode.
The projections in King Kong, and there wasn't a lot in King Kong, but the puppet, that was great. The projections in King Kong were kind of cool.
Can we discuss the projections in a certain play opening next week?
We will be when we start talking about a show that's going to open next week. We're going to talk a lot about the projections, amongst other things. We're going to have a whole bunch of time to talk about it. But we are. So the projections were designed by Peter Negrini, which is a great name. And then, as we talked about, so this is a 30-year-old musical, as we just discussed. 93 is 30 years ago. Is that amazing?
You know, it's exciting when I keep saying it's the 40th anniversary of this, or it was the 40th anniversary the other day of Romancing the Stone, and I was all like, Joan Wilder, and then I was like, whoa. I'm really that old. It keeps reminding me how old I am, and I don't like that.
All right, we're going to keep going. He said at the end of his review, quote, "Truth be told, I was not expecting to be as bowled over by this story or this revival as I was. Huh. But there's no arguing with talent and so much prowess on and off the stage. Tommy is an electric pan to rock immortality and talent wherever one can find it." And they all like, so this play... does that thing where Tommy is played by three different actors at different age groups. And mm-hmm. the older Tommy, I've got to find his name. They like him.
They were digging the older Tommy.
They dig the older Tommy.
Go older, Tommy.
Yeah, go older. I can't find it. But I know it's mentioned in one of the other reviews, which I'm just going to jump in and read the other reviews. Deadline's Greg Evans says, "Feels less like a stick-to-what-works revival than a top-to-bottom reimagining. Nearly all of it works beautifully." New York Times, Jesse Green said this, and he was the one negative, "This parade of odd plot points and narrational perplexities passes quite swiftly, perhaps at little more than 2 hours too swiftly, as a story is hard to follow and harder to swallow."
Hmm.
I don't know. The Rap's Robert Hoffler, "What gives this production some sense of fun, though, is Ali Lewis Bergozzi." He's the one that plays Tommy. I'm trying to direct people off the air. I'm not allowed to do it. Anyway, so I've sent my police cop over there to talk to them. I know that you listening have no idea what I'm talking about, but there you go. The Rap's... Time Out New York, Adam Feldman said, "Choreographer Lauren Latero is this production's most valuable player. Latero comes through remarkable numbers, the Broadway season's best choreography to date, that are executed with thrilling energy and skills by the ensemble." Yep.
Fantastic.
Fantastic. So that's Tommy. Are we going to go see it?
That's not on my... I mean, you know, if I had 500 days and $1 million, but not on the top. A lot of other stuff I'd
it's not on mine either. We had a couple of losses.
Today's got me.
Today's got me too.
I was not happy about today's.
Christopher Durang passed away at age 75. He wrote Beyond Therapy, Vanya and Sonia and Masha and Spike. And he had a rare...
Sister Ignatius.
Yep.
Yeah,
He had a rare form of dementia called... You know what? I'm not going to even try to pronounce it, but that's what he passed away of.
You lost Lou Gossett this week.
We did. We're going to talk about him in just a second, which I've got some interesting stuff about him.
Started in theater.
Like many others.
Well, let's just run right into Lou Gossett. So rest in peace, Christopher Durang.
I have to be honest with you. Christopher Durang and Lou Gossett could be an interesting combo creating together.
True.
Yeah.
Here's a question. Lou Gossett was 87 years old. They don't say exactly what he died from, but I'm guessing old age had something to do with it. But when I think of Lou Gossett Jr., I do not think of theater. I do not think of Broadway. I think of
Iron Eagle and Officer and a Gentleman.
Right.
And,
guess how many Broadway shows he was in?
A lot.
Many, many, many.
A lot. I mean, that's like what he did.
Over 10, like 12 of them.
He was a Brooklyn boy and then went on to do theater. And like, that's why when we lost him and I was talking about him, they're like, well, yeah, he's just the movie dude. I'm like, let me just tell you a little bit about him. Besides being the first supporting actor who is black to win an Oscar, that's Lou Gossett Jr. Let me tell you about all the show. I mean, he's just, and I do love me some Iron Eagle and Officer and a Gentleman.
Okay.
I do.
All right. Don't think I saw Iron Eagle.
Did they dim the lights for him? Do you know?
I don't know. My guess is they won't for either of them, which is unfortunate. Christopher Durang won one Tony Award. Not that it matters. And I think it might have been first Masha and Pasha and Pasha and
I think
and
it was. Yes. I think it was.
This is recent.
Yeah, just recent. So the Louis Gossett Jr. performed in his first Broadway show in 1953 in a show called Take a Giant Step, which opened on September 24th and closed on November 28th. So not a long lasting. But he was also in Raisin in the Sun for over a year. He was in that. He was in Golden Boy, My Sweet Charlie. And this is something I didn't know. He was in, it says, well, it says to present. I don't know that that's true. But he was in Chicago. He played Billy Finn. Did not know that.
I think it says to present because it's still open right now.
Yes. That's exactly what it is. Yes. But he played it in 2002.
He had just an infectious smile. When you saw him smile, he's one of those people you can feel his vibes through the screen kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Not all actors have that, but he had that.
True that. Ariana DeBose.
Oh, yeah, she's going to host the Tonys again.
Third time in a row.
Yes, she is.
Now, that has not happened very often.
No, not in a long time.
She's got range.
She's got everything. She's an amazing performer. And you can just look at her, and, you know, we've talked about Ariana DeBose a lot, but, you know, she became well known as playing the Bullet in Hamilton. And the Bullet in Hamilton is really just, you know, one of the chorus that has a featured little piece in it, but she literally plays the bullet that kills Alexander Hamilton and the son.
Yes.
But anyway, she's hosting the Tonys for the third time in a row. I thought she did a great job in the past 2 years. Only a few people have hosted it three times. NPH was one of them.
I was supposed to say, I knew NPH, but I can't remember the others.
I wish I could remember the others because it's not who you think because it's from back in the day. I can't remember who does, but very few have done three in a row, and I don't think NPH has done them three in a row.
I don't think it was three in a row. I think he was off a year.
And by NPH, we're talking, of course, about Neil Patrick Harris. Sorry, we're doing the initials, but that's big. Before we start talking about the other stuff, I want to talk to. I just want to mention this one little fact. That the opinions expressed on offstage and on the air are not necessarily those of co-ops, radio, the board of directors, volunteers, staff, or underwriters. It's just our opinion. It's just how we feel. We're just saying what we think. So just understand that. So lots of stuff has happened that we want to talk about. And you sent me this article, and I'd already had it in here anyway.
I was like, which of the many things are you going to talk about? It's about the Dream Act. This one I know. Okay.
This makes me angry. I'm going to try to find this guy's name. His name is J. Antonio Rodriguez. He's playing Orpheus in Hadestown on the road. He had to stop performing because he is a dreamer. And the dreamers, of course, everybody I assume knows that these are people that were brought over to this country. They were born in another country. They were brought over by their parents at a very young age. In his case, he was 2 years old and has never known another city or another country other than United States.
Yeah.
But, you know, by all measures, they are, and I'm using air quotes here, folks, illegal aliens. By some administrations and some people in this world have no right to be here, but they have no other home. So Obama passed the Dream Act where they can register they have – the idea was to give them a road to citizenship, but in the meantime, they will not be deported. That has since been – it was attempted to be repealed by – our former president, Trump, but it's still on the books. I don't think anybody can register new as a dreamer, but the dreamers that exist are still safe. But they have to I did not know this. They have to re-register every 2 years.
That's what got me was the whole re-registration because he had everything and was able to work, and then it was the re-registration part
that
made
me... And it is slow to a halt, so he cannot get re-registered. So
where are the Broadway fans raising up in protest in support of him?
So, I mean...
They're out there.
They're out there, and
are they?
This all just came up, and to be honest with you, Playbill and all these outlets are covering it and interviewing him, which they don't normally do, which I don't think everybody knew this was happening.
Well, he's also not going quietly. So, I mean,
now there's a whole the voices are starting to collect.
They need to
get out there.
Yes. Yeah, one of the things about the Dreamers is they don't, you know, they don't want to stir up too much trouble because it's, you know, it's being undocumented in this country is being vilified big time these days.
Yes, we're calling on not the Dreamers to make noise, but those that are secure.
Correct. We should be making noise, and that's what we're doing right now. And they should have a path to citizenship, and we shouldn't be vilifying anybody that wants to be in this country. And the misinformation and the disinformation around people not born in this country that are living here just really makes me mad.
Yeah.
That's going on, and then
I think this gentleman is going to be a nice voice, and I think people around him and how he's reached out and how people have started covering it, I think we will see some, I want to say change, I'm going to put it out there in the universe, change, but I think we will see something good start to happen.
I hope so. I guess.
Yeah, but we would just hope that change extends beyond him.
And exactly.
Touches everybody that's in that situation.
That's what I feel like.
He has a lovely support system with theater and supporters who are amplifying his voice. There's so many people in that condition that don't have that is facing the same thing.
Yeah. And the problem is, unfortunately, the situation I don't think is going to get any better until after November.
I was like,
depending
election.
On what the outcome is, because all the stuff that's happening around immigration is a political minefield that is just being more and more weaponized against people that I think are trying to do the right thing.
Yeah, there's
so,
a lot.
Makes me angry. And I think that's one of the reasons why there's such a backlog of these cases and they're not being re-upped. And I'm trying
to
figure out how the logistics...
I just don't understand why there's a backlog, especially with people who have already... gone through the process multiple times.
Should be a rubber stamp, especially...
He's American. We can people fairly.
Like,
she tells jokes, folks.
We do. We do.
Lots of jokes.
Anyway, I think that if people wanted to raise their voice and write their senators and call their congresspeople and get them to do stuff, tis the time. On to other stuff. Good stuff, I think. I did not know this organization. It's called Breaking the Binary. And they're partnering with a couple of theaters right now, Steppenwolf and Woolly Mammoth, to support theater created by transgender, non-binary, two-spirit artists across the regional theater system. So they're coming out to the regions and working with companies, Steppenwolf and Woolly Mammoth. Those are two huge nonprofit theater companies.
Big ones.
So we're not starting small. So I think that is great. And this is from a Playbill.com article written by Margaret Hall. And she writes, Breaking the Binary will work with the partnered companies to help produce workshops of new plays by TNB2S Plus Artists, which is an acronym for non-binary people, based in their respective communities. The Breaking the Binary Across America program is generally sponsored by Jody Falco and Jeffrey Steinman. So I'm glad that is happening.
Yeah, it's kind of cool.
And along we're talking about funding of programs, we also have a program where we're trying to build new audiences, and I've got to find this because it's...
Yeah, I didn't know what this is, and I saw how you wrote it, and I was like, do I win that?
Yeah.
So I'm curious about this.
Yeah, so it is...
I want to know what you have to say.
Three artist organizations are getting $1 million each to basically get new audiences. And it's not based on the organizations, and the organizations are... Portland Center Stage, Actors Theater of Louisville, and Long Wharf. But really, it's their artistic directors. And that's Marissa Wolf, Robert Barry Fleming, and Jacob Padron. And the work they're doing to try to get different audiences rather than the, quote, largely white, affluent, older audiences. So I think that they're great getting $1 million to get that done. Nicole and I were talking before we went on the air, really trying to build audiences that aren't largely white, affluent, older audiences.
And I'm curious about what strategies they're taking to do that.
Well, interesting. Some of the things that have happened already.
I was like, they bulleted a few things, I think. But
so
not.
I believe it's the Long Wharf has given up their space, and they're now itinerant, and they're producing in different found spaces, no longer at like a standard traditional.
So they don't have brick and mortar spots, yeah. And they're doing it in
who are they producing?
Location. Yeah.
Question, they don't get into that.
Lisa B. Exactly. Thompson.
And then this is one of the things that just broke my heart is the Actors Theater of Louisville has had a Humana yes. Theater Festival for years, and they let that go a few years ago.
Yes.
I know.
And we've talked about this, and this I don't understand the move because that. Shined the light on many mm-hmm. new playwrights. There were a lot of shows that came out of the Humana Festival that went on to do really great things. They published a book every year of yes. the plays that are part of that festival. I bought them almost every year, and that doesn't exist anymore. But they're saying this is a good thing. I'm using air quotes.
I don't know how that's a good thing.
Instead, the Actors Theater of Louisville is focusing on programs that support health and wellness, social equity, and how these things intersect. But I think, Lisa, your point is like,
why not both?
Whose
health is in wellness? Who's
right.
leading the charge?
And where's
who's
that $1 million?
On the board? Who's
who are they helping?
It's all the things, right?
Yeah. Exactly. I guess it's something we'll find out, hopefully, and hopefully it will be the right populations.
Don't say DEI, we're in Texas.
We can't say it. But yeah, we'd have to shut down the radio station. Did I mention that these are our own opinions?
Just ours.
The last thing I want to talk about, because this is something I was thinking about a lot lately, this is something that's been big, that things that we're doing in my theater and other things, and that's around intimacy direction and how that's taken a really big part of a lot of our theaters. And this was an article that made me think of it. It was an article about the show Teeth and mm-hmm. how they handled the intimacy direction of that. And this is the Teeth we talked about last week is the play that deals with...
it's Michael R. Jackson.
Correct. Mm-hmm. Female genitalia that grows teeth, and it's based on a horror film.
Based on a horror film.
Yes. But
the marketing on it is kind of brilliant. I sat in on an interview with him that American Theater did that was fantastic.
Great. But what we're talking about here is the intimacy direction, and I want to talk about intimacy direction in general and how important that is. I just recently saw a play, a local play here, that had a fair amount of intimacy. And what I noticed as an audience member is those people on stage looked uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. When it didn't look, it was a married couple that are hugging and kissing. I mean, it's not huge intimacy, but it is intimacy. And it, to me, I went out of the moment because it didn't look real anymore. These people did not look like they loved each other or that they had been intimate before. And I could tell that there was no intimacy director involved in there. And indeed, in the program, there was no intimacy director credited. And having worked with an intimacy director and watching how they work, it's so important, I mm-hmm. think, when you have intimacy on stage. How do other people feel about that?
I don't like to work on projects without intimacy directors, and not just for like relationships, but intimacy in general. We have mm-hmm. like this one-sided scope on how we look at that. But I think intimacy has so many different layers mm. and having that body in the room to know what everybody is comfortable with, what are their...
it's about boundaries.
I use the red, green, yellow light yep. tactic.
Mm-hmm. I think it's a good point when you say it has so many different levels. It's not just so cut and dry it's this.
Especially not anymore with acknowledging that as artists, we bring ourselves into space. And a lot of that times that includes our traumas
uh-huh.
and when we're triggered and how we're
Absolutely.
Triggered. And so for me, an intimacy director in the room helps protect all of the artists and including the directors, because sometimes they don't even realize in a moment that they need protection from that type of work that is above what they're trained in.
Well, it's actually everybody involved in the production. I mean, as a director, I will not do a show without an intimacy director on it in some way, shape, or form. If it's just really to talk about boundaries and how we operate as a loving and open team together.
Well, it's like you said, you also bring in all your traumas with you, and at the same time, you're asked to be vulnerable, so you're not just walking in with like your armor on to deal. You're walking in completely open and then dealing with the trauma and then like adding all these different layers of it. Yeah, I feel like it needs to be just as standard as you would have a director or lighting design. Yep. And like it's another piece of the puzzle that needs to be
there. I'm actually very happy with the way the theater community is going along those lines, and I think I encourage everybody that does a show to have an intimacy director involved, especially if there's intimate moments. But as you said, theater is an intimate
thing in the first place. Yeah.
Anyway, we are 10 minutes over, so we've got to run on to the next thing so we can learn all about the show and the projections that Lisa alluded to a little earlier. So let's take a little break. Let's listen to 21 from Tommy. And you can go to offstageonair.com and get a link to all the things we talked about here and the things that we wanted to talk about that we didn't get to talk about. Lisa, did you want to say something?
No.
You had that look in your eyes. Anyway, we will be right back after this.
Got a feeling 21 is gonna be a
We are back. You're listening to Offstage and On the Air with Lisa and Nicole. We've had just a wonderful conversation. And we're going to jump into our next, our first guest, which is The Vortex and the show The Black Feminist Guide to the Human Body. And we have here the incredible writer, friend of the show, very dear friend of mine, the incomparable Lisa B. Thompson. Hi, Lisa.
Hi, Lisa.
It is so
Lisa,
good to
the Cult
see
Jam is not available today, though.
The what?
The Cult Jam.
The Cult Jam. I don't know what that means.
Oh, my goodness. We got to get you some Black History lectures.
I'm pretty bad. I'm unfortunately as white as they come. Also with us, we have the movement director and one of the performers, Sade Jones. Sade?
Hello, hello.
And then we have the assistant director, Natasha Devon.
Hi.
And of course, the director who is not here is Rudy Ramirez. So Lisa B., tell us about this show. What is it?
It is a love letter to Black women and girls. It's a love letter actually to myself. And it's also a piece for people who love Black women and girls. And it is something that I've never done before, which is work with a composer to create music, Jeff Guthrie P. Ramsey and the Musicality Group. We made some original songs for this.
Oh, lovely.
And working with a movement director, Sade M. Jones, came back from North Carolina to grace this show.
Yeah, Sade left us, but I'm glad she's here right now.
Yes, and we're really blessed to have a assistant director who's stepping in amazing ways, and from Arkansas.
Yes, Arkansas.
And telling us about with the work she's been doing. So it's all new for me, and it's about time to push myself into uncharted water. So I'm just happy to have both of them here to talk about the show.
Amazing. So
it is fantastic.
So let's talk about the movement. And so we have music and movement. Does the music have vocals or is it just instrumental?
Yes. Haley Armstrong.
Oh, you went all in when you decided to add music for the first time.
Yes. I was seeing these voice memos of me singing. And I must say, it was a moment when I was a young child. My mom turned around when she was washing dishes and I was singing. She goes, "Oh, baby, you can't sing." Not even a
Thanks,
little
Mom.
Bit. Oh. And she was always, you know, she just was like, bless your heart. So the fact that he came back with beautiful things that he did from those horrible screechings is really a testament to his amazing musical. I say power.
Wonderful.
His genius.
Well, as you mentioned, Haley Armstrong is in it. Nadine Mazan is in it. Also a wonderful cast. So is it a cast of three?
Yeah.
Tell us about the movement that's part of it, Sade.
The movement is considered to be the engine of this production, which is really beautiful. The movement is considered to be the engine of this production, which is really beautiful. The movement is a little bit different than what I've worked with before in other productions in the sense that it's being excavated from memory. So from collective memory of all the Black women that are in the room, not just the cast members, but everyone. So the process is different.
Yeah, how was that process of putting that all together?
Well, luckily, Lisa had the mind to start early. And so we were able to start one-on-one just with what movements came out of her body when she'd read through the scripts. So we did a lot of one-on-one work. And then from there, we then went into the cast. So we were able to have a workshop in August, this past August, and then also this past May. So we had two kind of rounds of for me to notice what is happening in the body as a movement director and as a cultural ethnographer, right, as well, to see what's coming up, what is that that's personal, and what of that is collective, and what of that is ancestral, passed down through like body memory. So it's really powerful.
Yeah, I want to give some more shout out to Sade, though, who also did a movement and music in January. And it was just her and the musician, and then this me and Rudy just kind of being there, but basically her talking about the way in which, what kind of music she needed for the movement that she already had, as opposed to us following, as I think Chani told me this before, we don't follow the music follows the body. Mm-hmm. And so
what a cool process.
Yeah, and then it really came out of the thought of doing of a piece like this came out of watching Sade perform in the past.
Oh, great.
That she didn't know I was in the audience watching and thinking, that's what I want to see in some kind of work that I do. And it was years later, but never forgot watching her move on stage.
Amazing. So this is described as poetic storytelling. Is there a narrative? Is it a series of stories and music and dance pieces? How does it all come together, and what's the approach that you and Rudy are taking directorially?
So it's considered a choreo poem, which if you think about like some of the most famous choreo poems, the first thing that comes to mind is Four Color Girls by Entezake. So this is in the same vein. So it is a full fleshed out story that has vignettes of moments and transitions and through lines. I think for me, the biggest thing that I am approaching as a poet is the poetry in the script, and how do we activate that? How are we different in the direct address that is to the audience, and how beautiful those moments are, and how are we taking in each other on stage? And Rudy has given me a lot of freedom to create and work with the actors in a way that is so beautiful and collaborative, and it serves the story of not just the Black women in the script, not just the Black actors, but in addition, the Black women that will come and see the play.
Hmm.
Yeah, that's actually an interesting question. Who is your audience? Black women, or is it? I mean, I know you want everybody to come see it, but who are you speaking to?
Yeah, Toni Morrison said, well, I mean, people write for their own souls, and the soul of a Black woman is create this piece, and Black women are part of bringing this piece to the stage. And whatever, whoever else can eat at the same table, it's fine, but, you know, you cook it and season it for the people that you are interested in, which is Black women, and those that love Black women. And just like when we talk about reading Dostoevsky, right? You know, like, is he looking, thinking about the Black girl in San Francisco in 1975? No. But if I'm able to eat at that table, then it's wonderful. So
I love that analogy.
Yeah, if you can eat at the table, I love that.
We often only ask these questions of people of color and queer folks instead of, you know, everybody's is a particular story.
Yeah.
Every story is. So, and we learn about humanity by being open to all the stories and not banning them. Oh, sorry.
There you go. True. So this started out in 2021. Am I correct that you're working with Fusebox?
Before that, I worked on, I got a support from the National Performance Network to support the work. I did worked on it. I also, the first money that I got ever was from Black Art Matters ATX, supporting me to develop this. I had a very different kind of idea for, I wrote a whole script and threw that out because it was not real enough. And focus on the storytelling instead of the life. And then went to McDowell and worked on it. I mean, this is probably the most support I've ever had. I've had to take a performing arts residency to do this piece, and I'm probably forgetting some other funding source, but just being able to pay people as we develop the piece, as opposed to you get paid after we start the show. It's like, here's for this. Now is a chunk. Here's a chunk to support our actors. And hopefully that's going to also change in theater. Not just asking people to work for free.
Correct.
Particularly in this town.
We talk about that ad nauseum, and that's something that we feel very strongly about as well. We are running out of time. This is going to be happening at the Vortex. When do you open?
We open April the 12th. Super excited about that.
And how long do you play?
I want to say
May 4th.
Yes.
4th.
Wonderful. And where can folks go to get more information?
Vortex.org.
Vortexrep.org.
Rep. Thank you.
Awesome. Well, I'm very excited about it. We're all in rehearsal. So just as a final word, how's it all going? How excited are you to get this in front of people?
Pretty excited. It's going well. I think that what's best to leave people with is that the process is just as rich as the production.
Love that. We've just got a
lot of
nuggets of gems of things that I'm stealing.
A lot of good stuff today.
Yeah.
And if you see the billboards, there's 9 billboards in Austin and around in the surrounding areas.
Amazing.
So you can do hashtag Black Feminist Guide and post a picture of yourself with the
There you go.
I love that.
So use that hashtag Black Feminist Guide and get it out on the social medias. I think that's a wonderful idea. Well, thank you so much.
As a marketer, you know that got me very excited.
Thank you all so much for joining us on the show.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah, thank you all very, very much.
Wonderful. That was Lisa B. Thompson, Natasha Devon, and Sade Jones of the Vortex production of the Black Feminist Guide to the Human Body, playing April 12th through May 4th. For more information, you may visit vortexrep.org. And of course, I had to play something from Four Colored Girls. This is Janelle Monáe, Without a Fight. We'll be right back.
Yes.
We are back. You're listening to Offstage and On the Air with Lisa and Nicole. What a great conversation. It was so good to see Lisa and Sade and everybody again. I only wish we had more time with them.
That was fantastic. They really did give us a lot of good nuggets and things to think about.
Like, lots of nuggets, as we like to call them in the business. Well, let's just jump right into our next guest, which is Austin Playhouse, and a show I cannot wait to see. It's called Born with Teeth. Speaking of teeth, but these are different teeth. And here we have the director, Ben Wolf. Welcome back to the show, Ben.
Thank you for having me.
And Ismael Soto, the third. Not the second.
Correct. The third.
The third. And Bailey Ellis.
Hi. Yeah.
Bailey, have you been on? I know y'all have been on. Have you been on the show before?
I've never been on the show before, but I've watched it or listened to it rather.
You could watch it if you want.
There was at one point we used to have a webcam.
We did.
Sometimes we miss it. Sometimes we don't.
Well, y'all are doing the show Born with Teeth. For Austin Playhouse. And not only are you doing the show, this is the first show in the new secondary space, right? Am I right?
No, that's actually Every Brilliant Thing. We're still
Never mind. Forget I ever said that. Yeah. You're still in the normal.
But soon.
Okay. But soon. Very soon.
Tell us about the show, Ben.
Well, it's a play about a meeting between Kit Marlowe and Will Shakespeare.
I've heard of them.
Yeah, yeah. I like to say it's a play about love, art, and espionage. And if that doesn't get you excited, I don't know what will.
Well, I'll tell you what will get them excited is if they go to the Austin Playhouse website and look at that wonderful video that y'all have.
Oh yeah.
What did I just say this morning? Earlier, I was talking to Ben. I was like, Ben, I love that video. I watched it a few times.
Well, thank you.
And
so
I had no
fun.
Business. I was in the
of
thick
in
of
it.
Work and still watching.
Well, thank you.
Stuff,
thank you.
So.
Mm-hmm. Credit to Sarah Chong Dickey for taking my 10-minute ramble and turning it into a coherent 1-minute video.
Yeah, yeah, even the B-roll really. Of the show, like all of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we actually understood every word you said. So the two of you, Bailey and Ismael, y'all are playing Kit Marlowe and William Shakespeare. Bailey, you're playing Shakespeare?
I am, yes.
Tell us about this character. I've never heard of him. Who is he?
Yeah. Not a very famous guy. no, but this production, this show is really cool. William Shakespeare, we all know him. Or many of us know him. Mm-hmm. But this interpretation, we see him at a very early stage in his career. He's very young, up and coming. He hasn't written many of the plays that we're very familiar with today. So I think we see an interesting look at this very pivotal writer of history.
Yeah, and Ismail, you play Kit Marlowe.
I do. So this is Kit's got a couple of shows under his belt at this point, a couple of plays, and he comes across Will Shakespeare, and it takes place in a part of, I guess, Kit's life where there's some mystery around what his profession was.
Ah.
So.
Well, yeah, that's always been the thought, and it appears. So I don't know this show. I don't know anything about this show other than that it's. Deals with these two characters, but when I look at this video, I'm seeing a little bit of we were talking about intimacy before. I'm seeing mm-hmm. a little bit of intimacy Absolutely. Between these two men.
Yeah, we do. Yeah. We have an intimacy coordinator, director.
Good, you pass.
You passed the grade that we were talking about today. Yeah. So yes.
Very important in this work, mm-hmm. and our intimacy director is Grace Ramsden.
Totally.
She's done great work.
Yeah, she has
incredible work.
Yeah, and yeah, there's that these two characters flirt like there's no tomorrow.
There's some sparks.
Yeah,
there's some sparks. There's some sparks happening.
Absolutely.
Would this be billed as a comedy?
It's sure. definitely got comedic moments.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's a drama with comedy or a comedy with drama.
Yeah,
I'd
say
drama
say.
With some comedy.
I would agree with that, Ben. I feel like it has both, you know, both in it on kind of every single page, which I think makes it so fun. But I would say it's a thrilling show. It's
certainly a roller coaster ride.
Yeah.
It's a shorter show, so it is nonstop, just the two of us. It's keeps you on your toes.
Does it last more than 15 minutes?
Yes,
it does.
I don't. You know, short is a relative term. I was just curious.
That's true.
I'm guessing this is a 90-minute one actor.
It's a little under.
You want to make
good.
Another guess?
Perfect.
No.
No, I don't.
Okay, well, I'll say
I don't at all.
It's about 75 minutes.
Just keep them guessing. You
know? Yeah. I'll just keep going. Well, we'll be able to hear a little bit of this. Y'all are prepared to do a little scene, yes?
Yes.
We have. Yes.
Well, great. Does somebody want to set it up? What are we seeing here?
Sure. This is early on in the play and is one of the many kind of standoffs that Kit and Will have as they look into each other's eyes, and question each other's intentions with
Wonderful.
Their collaboration.
Yeah.
Well, this is Bailey Ellis and Ismail Soto III doing a scene from Austin Playhouse production of Born with Teeth.
I honestly don't know what's happening. Are you recruiting me, spying on me, or warning me?
Well, I came in to do one thing, but I'm improvising. There's something about you. I think you bring out the mother hen in me.
If there's anything as soft as a hen's feather about you, I'd be very much surprised.
Well, you're right there, generally speaking. Less of a hen than a cock.
And now you're what? Seducing me?
Not my type. Far too old.
Again, we are exactly the same age.
Quite.
Oh. What? Oh, Kit.
Did I say you could call me Kit?
I feel we're on that footing. Will you call me Will?
Christ, you're the sort to pun on your own name, aren't you? Well, I will if you will. Why do you stop?
I feel it'd be like petting a leopard. Lovely for a moment until the teeth flash out.
What a compliment. Do you really think I'd bite you?
I think you would devour me.
Mm.
No. No. For the last time, for the love of God, I'm begging you. May we write this bloody play and get paid so I can eat and, with any luck, never have another so confusing conversation this side of my grave.
Such a fuss. You only had to say so.
Oh, amazing. I was just... I got... taken in by the dialogue. What fun. It sounds like fun.
Yes, it is.
It's, you know, if just based on this scene, I'm saying we have a romantic show.
There's a bit of
a... Hold on, I'm going to turn your microphone on, Ben Wolf.
You're the only one. You were in trouble.
Oh,
yeah.
You
were turned off over there.
So that's great. So, Ben, did you bring this to Austin Playhouse, or did they have it on their schedule? How did this show up into the season this year?
Well, in the summer of 2022, we went to Houston for the Alley's All New Festival, and they
Y'all
were remounting
it. Y'all
do
that it. Every year, it
we're
seems
trying
like.
To.
It was,
yeah.
They were there. It,
they were there when
we were there.
There.
Yeah, because they went to see Noir 2. Remember,
Correct.
We couldn't get in to see
That's
Born
right.
with
That's
Teeth
right.
with that.
Correct.
And it was
we were
such
ships
a,
in the night.
Ships in the night. But it was such a thrilling performance. You know, that whole... that whole all new festival was amazing.
That year was really great. Yeah.
And then this play was the last thing we saw on our final night there. And as soon as the curtain came down, the entire audience was up on our feet. And so, great. As we were walking out the door, Laura and I looked at each other and just said, we have to do this show. And thankfully we were able to get the rights, and I'm thrilled that we're presenting it. You know, I've said to many people,
it's only a handful of people have done it. Yeah. And you really quickly turned that right around in the state and was like, we're going to take it from Houston to Austin.
Yes.
Yeah. It's happening all over the country right now.
Yeah.
All of a sudden there's a,
it's popping up,
which, makes complete sense to me. Yeah.
How exciting for a playwright is the playwright from Texas?
She's not. I believe she was based out of New York originally.
I think so.
I'm not familiar with that.
Yeah,
place.
Not at all. Not no. at all. But yeah, okay. I've said that her publicist needs to be given a raise, because the companies that are putting it on now, there was, what is it? Theater West in Seattle.
Yeah, Arts West.
La Petite in New Orleans. Yeah. Like it's
amazing.
Popping up everywhere.
Yeah. Well, that's great. When do y'all open?
We open this Friday, April 5th, and we run through Sunday, April 28th.
Great. And where can folks go to get more information?
You can visit our website at austinplayhouse.com.
Awesome. Well, I'm so happy to have y'all on the show.
Thank you. I can't wait to see this show.
I can't wait to see y'all work.
Can't wait to have y'all.
Yeah. So this is a two-hander. It's just the two of you on
just
stage,
the
right?
two of us.
Just the two of
them. Great. That's a lot of work.
Yeah, that was pretty
and
it's
not a dull moment to be found.
Thinking about 75 minutes of you guys.
Yeah. Yeah, if it's any more, we haven't done our jobs.
Right.
Well, great. Thank y'all so much for being on the show.
Thank you for having us.
Great. Well, that was Ben Wolf, Bailey Ellis, and Ismail Soto III with Austin Playhouse, production of Born With Teeth. For more information, austinplayhouse.com. And this song is from Tuck Everlasting. It's called Partner in Crime. We'll be right back. I have a partner. And we are back. You are listening to Offstage and On the Air with Lisa and Nicole. That was such a great interview.
That was a great interview. Our earlier interview was a great interview. Our chit-chat has been good. This has been a good show.
Everything is good. And so we're going to just – I'm going to blast through the local stuff that we would have done in our last few minutes here. We're going a little out of order because we just because
our guests were too much fun. All of them.
Our guests were too much fun. We had too much to say. So what I want to talk about is – this show, oops, hopefully, I don't know if y'all heard that, but I just threw.
But you have this giant case on it. There was no way that was
happening. I have this
giant
case on it. This is, because it's the theaters. This I found interesting. It's a show called Friends Folio, An Evening with Shakespeare's Monsters at ACC, and it's presented not by the Department of Drama, per se, but it's presented by the ACC Makeup and Costume Department.
I saw all this, and then I saw it pop up, and I didn't get to investigate more. So I'm assuming you did, and you can tell me more, because
well,
I
don't
find
know a whole
this
bunch.
Curious.
I just saw this. This I saw at the ATXtheater.org website. It doesn't have a whole bunch of information.
But I love the whole makeup and costume and
I do as well.
And Shakespeare's mom. I mean, there's so much to unpack with that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So you can get information at ACC's website. It's ACC, austinacc.edu/drama. That's where you can get information. Other things that are going on in and about town. Fusebox Festival is starting next week. And I'm very excited about it. I never get to see all of it because they are always
working at Ground Floor Theater.
Yeah. And I'm very excited this year. We have C.B. Goodman's In the Beginning, who she did this show at the Crash Box last year, the year before, and it was one of those shows that you go in and you go, a friend of mine's doing the show, it's probably going to be cute. It was so much fun.
Didn't C.B. Goodman come on and talk about this?
She did.
She did, right?
Sure she
I'm
did.
Like, I remember this that visit.
So she's performing next week at Ground Floor Theater. And then and of course, I didn't write anything else that's happening because that's all I really care about. There's a couple of shows that happen at Ground Floor Theater, but Fusebox Festival happens all over the city.
Yeah, it's a
and,
great thing.
And I don't know if I'm speaking out of school. I don't think I am, but they are going to every other year now, so it's not going to be every other year. They're not called Fusebox Festival anymore. They're now called Fusebox Arts, I think, because they are now a year-long company.
Making it happen. Yeah,
so they're doing a lot of stuff with Texas Performing Arts. So I'm really proud of them. They're doing such great things. You know, Lisa B. Thompson's show is part of the
Fusebox. I was just about to say, we can
Yeah.
Tie it right back.
So what makes me sad is that this will be every other year. So this will be, we won't have it at Ground Floor Theater again for another 2 years after this year.
Yeah, that is a bummer.
Yeah. But anyway, that's happening. We talked about Anklets in the Boardroom before. That's with the company Leela. We have now missed the March 29th performance, but we have one on April 20th.
Correct.
A year with Frog and Toad is still playing at the
year
Zach.
Toad and Frog.
Ribbit, ribbit.
And all
that was
friends.
I believe a crossword puzzle clue.
Was it?
Yeah, at the New York Times. Something about
There's
Frog
a
and
fantastic
Toad.
Instagram that some lady has crocheted all the little mini frogs and toads, and she sets them up in all the little stories from the books and the musical. Hmm. And it's like the rabbit hole of joy on Instagram. Yeah. I'm just saying.
So Home, I'm Darling is in their last weekend, Jarrett Productions. I did go see their show last week, and it was lovely. What a fun
did
show.
Did you walk in and say, Home, I'm Darling?
I did. I did exactly that thing. The Good Thief opens at Hyde Park on the 11th of April, plays the 27th. The Prom is opening
tonight
at Zach Theater. I'm looking forward to seeing that show.
Yeah, and you know what I'm excited about with it is that the you know, when it's done in New York, it was all done with adults, but there are actual pre-professional company students as the students in the show, so they're experiencing this in their real life as it's going on, and I just think adds a little different.
Lovely. We just talked to Born with Teeth at Austin Playhouse from the 5th to the 28th. Into the Woods is playing at the Mary Moody Northern Theater starting on the 11th through the 21st. They will be guests on our show next week.
It is exciting.
Romeo e Juliet at UT, April 10th through 21st. And then Romeo and Juliet by the Baron's Men on April 5th through the 28th. Men on Boats, who we had on last week. Well, that was a fun interview as well.
I was like, Men on
Boats. They're playing at Ground Floor Theater this weekend. And they are just, you know, it's a whole bunch of young, they specialize in people that are just starting out.
It's great.
And I've been watching their enthusiasm. So it looks like a lot of fun.
Hopefully it'll be infectious and other people will catch on.
Yep. We just have time to do Today in Theater History and say goodbye.
Tell me about that stuff,
so we'll just do very quickly. The openings was the Mother play, which is now playing currently, because they do that thing at Playbill. It's a play in five evictions, and it's playing at Second Stage at the Hayes Theater. Uncle Vanya, folks should go look at the cast list of Uncle Vanya at Lincoln Center. It's pretty amazing. Everybody is in it. South Pacific opened 2008. I believe that's the Bartlett Shear revival. A Raisin in the Sun revival, 2014. Paradise Square opened in 2022. Amelie, which we were going to play music from that, we're not anymore, opened in 2017. Birthdays is Marlon Brando, David Hyde Pierce, Marsha Mason, and Alec Baldwin.
That's an interesting group of people.
Amongst others. We are going to have you stand by for the Austin Common Radio Hour. This week, it is our friend Robert Sims with
Robert.
Lights, Camera, Austin.
Austin, he's going to tell you about all the good films.
And we're going to be back next week when we look at what's happening offstage and on the air. And this is from White Rose, the musical, which is about the White Rose Society, about the kids who defied Hitler during World War II.
Interesting.
And this song is called The Sheep Chose a Wolf. We'll see you next week, folks.
That could be a lot of things.
What I saw at the rallies, what I felt in my heart, was a truth that was hidden.